I'm Josiah. Before I start, a programming note, I will not be standing here until 9:45. I sense the disappointment.
Hey, everybody, let's turn these suckers on.
So I can't tell you how thrilled I am to be here. Very honored, Jim. Thank you. Those of you that have seen me do the pitch before know that I don't dress like this when I do the pitch. I was not going to pack a sports jacket. This is my home. This is where I came in. And I just want to be one of us. You know, I'll go to conventions and stand up there and talk to a room of strangers and tell them what I think I know about the program. But you guys know better. The other thing that I was thinking, I asked Jim earlier in the week, so what exactly is it you want me to do? And he kind of threw up his hands and said, whatever you want to do. And what I was thinking is, I can stand up here and give you my 45-minute to an hour pitch, in which I go through the steps and tell you a little bit about my experience with them. And that's all well and good. Or we can do something a little more workshop-like, where I talk for a little while, and then you guys ask questions and make comments, and we have a little more of an interactive experience. Does that latter sound better to you? Anybody? Anybody? Yeah. I'll do the pitch. You know, I kind of go on autopilot with that thing, but like I said, I feel like this is my home. You guys are my guys. You know me. And we're at a retreat, you know? And I think that one of the most important things about being in a setting like this is the interchange, the fellowship. Yeah. So, and boy, I am going to be winging this tonight. Because when I had that conversation with Jim, I said, what's the theme? Because I was thinking about, you know, doing something a little different. And what he told me was STFU. He didn't tell me that you guys are going to be working steps up until that point, which might have changed things. But he said STFU. And for those of you that don't know, there might be one or two. That's code in our little circle for shut the f*** up. And yeah, it's funny and cute, but you know what? It's one of the most valuable Al-Anon tools that you can have in your arsenal. And as I thought about that, and I know that it's been a very valuable tool for Jim, I thought... You make fun all you want, but it's a valuable tool for all of us. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about domestic tranquility? You want to talk about employing the first tradition? Just don't say it. At any rate, when he told me that that's going to be part of the theme, and when I thought about how valuable that is as a tool, I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about tools of the program. And we went into town during the break, and we were talking about tools of the program, and I was remembering that when I first heard that in meetings, oh, it's so important for me to use the tools of the program, and I just, you know, have a toolbox of spiritual tools. I would get so frustrated and angry. And I realize now, looking back on it, that a big part of my frustration and anger was that I had no idea what anybody was talking about. And I had zero. None. I had no idea. So I thought maybe we could talk about STFU and some of the other really basic, simple, but not necessarily easy tools of the program. I mean, I love the steps. Every time I'm asked to speak, I will pitch the steps because I think they're the foundation of our program. They're in our traditions. And if nothing else, get a sponsor, work the steps in order, the way they were set up to be worked. You are going to find out things about yourself. You're going to change the way you act, and your life's going to get better. And you're not going to make messes where you used to make messes. You guys know I'm a big fan. But that's not all that we have available to us to help us make our lives better. There are these other little things, and they're peppered out throughout the program, peppered throughout our literature, and we even make some of them up, like this STFU thing. Pretty sure that's not in any conference-approved literature. When I first started sponsoring guys and I was younger and a little less discreet, it would be, shut the fuck up and mind your own goddamn business. Two very simple tools that I never thought of. So starting with that one, shut up. Just shut up. Just don't say it. We were talking earlier in the afternoon meeting about a resentment that one of the guys in our meeting had. And it had to do with a little spousal disharmony. And we were pointing out that there's only two people in any argument. The instigator and the perpetuator. You either started it or you're continuing. Otherwise, there isn't an argument. There's just one person yelling. And so if you find yourself in a situation like that, having the awareness that you can just shut up can be really valuable. Now, I know for me, so my motivator, most of you know, was a teenage daughter who's now in her early 30s and who bothers me almost as much now as she used to. The notion that I would not yap at her when she was an unruly teenager would never have occurred to me, ever. And you know, when I give my pitch and I'm talking about how I was completely unaware of the notion of the first step, I talk about driving her home from some crazy situation with police cars and drugs and things like that, and I'm yapping at her, right? And so I talk about this, and you know, I'm telling her for the 100th time the same things that I've told her, and she finally got so tired of hearing it that at a stop sign, she just bailed. She just jumped out of the car and left. And what I've come to realize as I look back on that is I did a lot of yapping to no avail. And I'm reminded that the term Al-Anon is actually an abbreviation. The long version is Al-Anon and on and on and on. One of the problems that I have as an Al-Anon is I know I'm right. I know I'm right. Do it this way, not that. What you tell me is that I'm powerless when they don't do it that way. But somehow, without that notion, I'm just going to keep trying to talk you into it my way. So when we say STFU, one of the things we're saying is, by the way, that's the first step. You're powerless. All that yapping that you do is going to get you nowhere. And for most of us, by the time we get around to STFU, by the time we get around to shutting up, we've already said it numerous times and it has not worked. So interesting, you know, we have this sort of cute little thing, STFU. Shut the fuck up. But it's really, in a way, it starts with the first step. Knowing that I'm powerless over that teenager, knowing that I've already told her, knowing that she's not listening, just shut up. Now, you can't shut up if you don't think that it's okay to not say anything. My wife says something, and she's wrong, or she's insulted me, or she has some notion of doing something that I really don't want her to do. Oh God, don't buy that thing. Oh crap, don't hang that there. Whatever it is. I just have to shut up and know that it's going to be okay if she buys that thing or hangs that thing there or whatever it is. The idea that we can let stuff go, that she can say something that's wrong, she can say something that's insulting, and I can stop and say nothing and let it go, requires that I have the faith and the surrender of the second and the third steps. So don't look now. But this macho STFU thing that we talk about is really nothing more than the first three steps and one tiny little abbreviated phrase, right? Takes a lot of awareness and a lot of courage to employ STFU. So I mentioned Jim a minute ago. We laughed because it's true, but also, you know, let's acknowledge what it takes to not say it, to let her run her mouth and not pick up the other end of the rope. And man, I cannot tell you how many fights have not happened, how many battles have not gone down, because I just didn't say anything. And don't look now, but a lot of times you say nothing and all that stuff she's saying just never comes to pass. So that's one of them, right? The idea of just saying a serenity prayer. Writing. How about writing, right? I mean, we talk about writing in the steps. We did some great exercises earlier. But how about just writing? One of the things that I have guys that I sponsor do when they're talking about that spouse that makes them so angry, particularly after they've started to STFU and not take the bait, what do you do with all that energy? What do you do with all of those arguments that you still have? You said that I was... Write her a letter. You stupid bitch. How dare you say that, right? Write her a letter. Read it to me. Seriously, write her a letter. Read it to me. Because one of the things that we have to acknowledge is that even though out there in the battlefield we're not saying anything, that doesn't mean that we don't have the inner turmoil, right? That doesn't mean that we're not saying inside, but wait, all of the injustice. All of the injustice. What about the fact that you're wrong? What about the fact that I don't want you to hang that picture there? Write it down. Write it down. Get it out. You know? Share it with someone else. Share it in a safe place. So, STFU, write it down. Call your sponsor and share it. Find a safe place to do it. Which is another sort of, you know, valuable Al-Anon tool. It's a tool. You know, one of the things about the phrases that we throw around here is I, you know, smart guy that I am, I'm trying to figure out what it means. And what is that word? It must be very important. You know, having had a spiritual experience. It's like, what's a spiritual experience? Dude, do you do things differently now than you used to do them? You know, are you courageous enough to try some stuff that you never would have tried before? Congratulations, you've had a spiritual experience, you know. Higher power. It's a higher power. Is it God? Is it nature? Is it universe? Is it the group? Is it the steps? Is it my sponsor? It doesn't matter, as long as it's not you. So tools, what's a tool? It can be as simple as being willing to call a sponsor. Pull a guy aside at the break of a meeting. Go out to coffee with someone. Say it out loud to someone else, right? That's a tool of the program. One of the most powerful things about alcoholism is the way that it isolates the alcoholic and the families of alcoholics. Gets you all by yourself. Gets you to the point where you start to believe what you're telling yourself inside. Nothing more valuable than being able to say it out loud to someone else. And to get an objective perspective to it. Get someone to tell you that it's going to be okay, that it's safe, that you're going to be all right. That's part of the beauty about something like this, right? 48 hours of concentrated getting it out and sharing it with someone else, spending time with like-minded people who have had similar experiences. So lots of things like that I could go on and on about, but I promise I won't. And so one of the things I want to do is I want to get, you know, input from you guys. Questions, comments, what are other tools, what tools do work, what tools don't. What tools do you employ? What tools have you never even tried? What tools would you never even consider? So, again, I want it to be a little more of us talking rather than me just yakking. Because after all, it is Al-Anon and on and on. Right? So anybody got anything?
Hi, Dave. I find I can ask too much. Sometimes, you know, and so how do you know when you need to speak up in order to take care of yourself, and how do you know when it's too much?
What an excellent question. I'm glad you raised the point, because it was one of the things that I had wanted to talk about when it came to something specifically like STFU, and that is, well, isn't there such a thing as STFUing too much? And it's absolutely true that there is. There is a reason that our literature talks about us not being a doormat. Absolutely. And so we want to find, in every aspect of our recovery, I believe, a place of balance. Sure, we want you to STFU because if you're like most of us Al-Anons, you talk too much and you try to control situations and you try to talk people into behaving the way you want them to when you really ought not to and when it's really not working. At the same time, what we know is that there are some Al-Anons, especially those of us who came up in alcoholic families, who don't have any voice at all. Who don't know how and when to say no, and who are the people pleasers who will absolutely say yes to everything because they're afraid to speak up and then walk around with these quiet, boiling resentments because they have said yes when they didn't really mean to say yes. So absolutely, there is such a thing as STFUing too much. What I believe about that is, whether and when and how you employ this STFU thing versus when and how you have a voice kind of depends upon which one of those Al-Anons you tend to be more like. I mean, some of us, like me, I mean, I have a tendency to be both of those guys, you know? I am both a nag and a doormat, depending on the situation. And that, for me, especially when it's your first employing these tools, is when having a sponsor to reason the things out with is so valuable. What I do believe is that if it's important enough that you do want to speak up and have a voice, it'll probably still be that important tomorrow, right? I mean, it seems really important when she first says it, but let a little time pass and see. Because what I have found in my relationship is that there are some times when I think, don't take the bait, this could be ugly. And then a day or two or three later, I'll want to come back and say, hey man, you know that conversation that we had about whatever it was? You know that, you said this, and it made me feel like I was being criticized. So reasoning it out with a sponsor when you don't necessarily have a good sense of internally, a good intuitive sense of when it is you need to say something, but certainly waiting. It's a big one. You know, I think that for me, I stay out of trouble just by being able to wait. You know, for me, I believe that this STFU thing can and should be employed when there's a lot of emotional energy. You know, she's angry, she's nagging, she's complaining, she's criticizing. The last thing in the world you want to do is, I did not. You know, come back to it later. But it's a good point. It's a good point. You know, you do want to have a voice and you do want to be, you know, it's like my wife, she wants to do all kinds of crazy shit and have stuff hung up and stuff on the counters, and I would rather have absolutely none of that stuff. She goes to the Goodwill and buys piles of stuff, and she'll put things around, and then there are some times when she wants to put something in a particular place and I just say, nope. I give you yes all the time, this one's no. So yeah, we've got to be able to find a way to have a voice. One of the ways, if you're one of those doormat guys, to have a voice is to make sure that you're participating in something like this. You know, you're raising your hand, you're sharing, you're working with a sponsor. You know, I tell the guys that I sponsor, you know, look, I'm gonna offer you my suggestions. I'm gonna say what I think. I'm gonna give you an opinion. I expect you to tell me if you think I'm wrong or if I'm suggesting something that you absolutely can't do. I want you to participate as an equal adult in this relationship. So I'll give you my best guidance in my judgment. And if I'm wrong, you tell me that. If I've said something that has hurt your feelings or made you angry, tell me that. This is going to be the safest place in the world for you to practice having a voice and reasoning things out. Because as your sponsor, I will always love you and I will never fire you. And you can talk to me. I've heard more than a few fifth steps where my name has been on the resentment list, all right? It's all right, baby. I got thick skin and broad shoulders. Bring it on. Who else?
Well, would the serenity prayer be part of the answer to his question?
Look, the question is, would the serenity prayer be part of the earlier question?
No, the answer to that question.
Part of the answer to that question.
Yeah,
you know, sure, because for a couple of reasons. One, it's going to help you with the pause. It's going to help you to find a little bit of room between what's being said and what you want to say. So yeah, God grant me the serenity, of course. If for no other reason that you're just putting a little space between the comment and the reaction. You know, one of my sponsees talks about how he's responsible for his first action and his second thought. You know, the first thought is, no, I did not do that. Right? That's your first thought. But you don't want that to necessarily trigger your first action, which is going to be, right? I'm sorry, that's how my brain works. Yeah, go ahead, Kate.
Wait is one of the tools in the program.
You know, wait, why am I talking, is just a more polite way of saying STFU.
Yeah.
And it actually comes after. Because if you're saying, why am I talking, you didn't STFU. STFU is the graduate level. That's the freshman level. Go ahead.
Hi, Greg.
Greg.
Specifically a tool program, but one I just kind of learned through osmosis and getting some advice, but I got that people pleasing and, you know, instant gratification of saying yes. And what I'm getting better at is catching myself When I say yes, do I, will this potentially turn into a resentment? If the answer is yes internally, it's, you know, let me think about that, let me get back to you. Not all the time, but I'm getting a little better at it, and, you know, it's just that improvement that's giving me some room.
Right, right. Think through the answer. And you know, generally speaking, I think that one, that's suggestive of another really good tool, and that is, just because someone has asked you a question doesn't mean that you have to answer it, have to answer it now. You know, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I find myself and men that I sponsor either in uncomfortable situations or anticipating uncomfortable situations that are really nothing more than, what if somebody asks me X about her, about my job, about what happened? And my answer is, dude, you're not an 8-year-old who just got caught with his hand in the cookie jar. You're an adult, and you have an opportunity to participate equally in any adult conversation that you have. And that means that you can find a polite but firm way of answering a question, either, can I get back to you on that, or I'd really rather not talk about that, or any number of other things. And one of the most powerful ways to make sure that actually ends an area of potential discomfort is to make a comment like that and then immediately change the subject, preferably asking that person about themselves. Because who doesn't want to talk about themselves? Oh, me? Oh, no, I'm good, right? So what about some of the do's and don'ts, right? I mean, the do's and don'ts, an absolutely outstanding set of tools. Go ahead.
I'm Doug.
Doug?
I understand that as the first thing that you were talking about. But let's say, you want to have some guidelines, like you've just built a deck, put in French doors, you want to go out and use the deck, but your spouse thinks that in front of the doors is a great place to put a bookshelf and a treasure chest full of toys and a playground set. And when you broach the subject, windows are getting kicked out, things are getting thrown, and police are getting called.
Right, so that question is, you know, so you're trying to shut the F up and you want to have a voice in a conversation, but what you're met with is all sorts of violent behavior. And, you know, one of the things about the tools that we employ, one of the things about the recovery that we can have is that there are limits to it. You know, you go to any sort of professional psychological worker, any kind of therapist, and they're going to tell you that we're really good up to a point. And if it gets violent, you know, that what are we going to do? You're not going to STFU. Professional help, you know, some really severe boundaries might be necessary, but if that kind of violence is going down, I don't know if we have the tools for that. But what I will tell you is that responding to that kind of violence by yelling back is probably never going to work. So yeah, STFU is still going to be effective because it's not going to inflame a situation. You know, one of the things that I've come to learn about recovery is that, you know, a lot of guys like to take that phrase from the other program and talk about, you know, happy, joyous, and free. Awesome. A whole bunch of the time we get to be that. But I don't care how good your program is. I don't care how much you work the steps and everything else. I don't care how spiritual you are, how long you've been here. Bad things are still going to happen. Seriously, bad things are still going to happen. Tragedy is going to happen. Death's going to happen. Illness is going to happen. Violence is going to happen. You know, I mean, I've watched Gordon and Scott and Jim and Steve all get sick and die. Those guys all worked really good programs. Really good programs. No matter how well they worked their programs, they still got sick and died. So we can't stop some of that stuff. But what we can do is we can avoid making it worse. We can have a good attitude along the line. Those guys all kept the faith, kept positive all the way to the end. So you're in a situation where it's violent and she's kicking in windows. You're going to need to make some serious decisions about boundaries, about what kind of professional help you get, about how long you stick around. Is it that bad? I do know that when I was in a relationship that had a tendency to get kind of verbally abusive and almost physically violent, I had to just walk away. She got in my face one time after I decided I wasn't going to engage, and she got worse and worse and worse, and I walked out the front door. Like, I am not going to participate in this. I walked out the front door. And we were at my house. Who else?
My name is Timothy.
Timothy.
I welcome a discussion about this because I've been just really struggling with my marriage for years. And I gotta say, it's better now than it was a few years ago. It's a lot better. But for me, I'm the one who usually wants to talk. I'm the one who likes to clear things up. I'm the one who doesn't like when there's unresolved conflict. I want to, even if we have a fight the night before, if it's the next day and we haven't talked about it, I want to talk about it. I want to clear it up. And every time I bring up what's happened, it just leads to another fight. It just never goes well. And you know, I keep hearing from my sponsor to STFU and you know, to say I can't have this conversation, but usually it's not, she's not the one wanting to talk or getting on my case. Usually I'm the one getting on her case or wanting her to hear how I feel and wanting her to, my sponsor says, don't go to your wife with your emotional issues. Like, why are you expecting or needing your wife to hear my emotional stuff? But I do. And to me, like, I want that from my spouse. You know, we could have a fight that where she like hits me, or where she screams at me, or slams the door, or whatever. And the next day, like, days will go by, and I'm just waiting for like the apology or the come around. Or the, and if I don't bring it up, she never will either. And we can actually have several good days as long as I can get myself to a place where I'm okay. But I have to be sure I don't feel like a doormat. It's a tough one for me. It's really hard. It's like, I mean, I feel like I can't be not okay with anything she says or does, because if something she does bothers me, something she says or something she does, and I try to express that, what usually happens is she gets mad at me. And that just, you know, sends me into, I'm off and running. And, you know, it can take me a while to calm down from that because I just don't get it. So I welcome the discussion about what I can do with that, especially from you married men. Thanks.
Right, so everyone heard that okay, right? All right, so the issue of, I want to talk about it. I want to go back. I'm not waiting. One second, Eric. So what I'm going to say is that your sponsor probably has a little bit of a point about you going to her repeatedly, trying to get some kind of reassurance so that you can feel better.
Yeah.
Seems like it's happened enough times now for you to probably realize that she either can't or won't provide you that. So that's a little bit of the notion of going to the hardware store for bread. You want someone to make you feel better, and you know from repeated attempts in the past that she can't and won't do that.
That's right.
So, what are you going to do? I mean, one of the things that we talk about around here is how insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. At some point, you're going to have to figure out a way to accept the fact that you're not going to get that result. Now, if it's important enough for you to get that result, then there are other options available to you. But clearly, if you're going to commit to being in the relationship with this woman, you're going to have to find some level of acceptance that you're upset with her, you want to talk about it, you want her to tell you that it's okay. It sounds like ultimately one of the things you want most is for her to apologize for the way that she's treated you, and she ain't going to do it, at least not with you asking her for it. Maybe if you let her alone, she might come to it on her own, maybe, but maybe not. You might never get that. She might not be equipped. One of the things that I think is really valuable, there's language to this effect in that big blue book that they use in the other room about using outside resources, getting professional help. And I think that's a valuable program tool to know that there are limits to what we can get out of this. I've gotten really, really good results from going with my wife to a therapist. Not because there was anything wrong, but because we thought we might be able to improve our ability to communicate with each other. And we got really good results by talking about the issues that were outstanding with a professional, neutral party in that same room. And, you know, she would ask questions and we would try to explain to her what we were feeling and doing. And in so doing, we were sort of explaining it in different ways. And our spouse would go, oh, look, how about that? I didn't know that's what you meant. So that can be good if both sides are willing and you can, if you have the resources to do it. But certainly it does sound like the answer is, yeah, you need to STFU, and then you need to figure out what to do with the unresolved emotional issues within, because you keep trying to get them resolved by going to the same place. Eric, you had a comment about that?
Yeah, I just, STFU is good for stopping yourself from saying the thing you really ought not to be saying. But a tool that you can use when it comes time, and it's, you need to think about what it is you are going to say and how you're going to say it, what is it going to be about, is to use the tool THINK. And THINK is just an acronym. It stands for, is it what you're going to say, is it thoughtful, is it honest, is it intelligent, is it necessary, and is it kind? And if you can make it through all those five filters, that's a kind of a good benchmark in terms of how to communicate what it is you need to communicate. And if it don't make it through some of those filters, then you know that ought to just fall into the STFU basket.
Right, right. And so one of the things that I do with the guys that I sponsor who want to have a discussion with a boss or with a spouse or with a child is, you know, write it out. Make a script. I mean, we absolutely script conversations in our heads that never happen, and that's not a good thing. Right, right. One of my sponsees used to call it ducking punches that are never thrown. But when you know you want to have a conversation, I'll say, write it out. Email it to me. We'll edit it and talk about it and go back, and then you'll at least know what it is you want to say. For me, when I do have to speak up and try to find my voice, I've got to be really careful, because the way I used to do it was I would be a doormat. I would get those resentments from saying yes when I didn't mean to say yes. And then I decided it was time for me to speak up. And the only way I had the courage to speak up is if I got so angry that it came out really loud and really mean. And I mean, that was the only way I knew to have a voice. And so what I have to do now, particularly with my wife, who, having grown up in an alcoholic home herself, is very sensitive to loud and angry, I have to make really sure that when I do want to say something, that I say it quietly and kindly. Figure out how to say it in a firm way so that she knows that I mean what I'm saying, but to just keep the volume leveled down and the intensity down.
Thanks. You know, I know for me, when I was my ex-wife, she was a love avoidant personality. She didn't have the ability to have either empathy or type of emotional vulnerability that I was getting through the marriage therapy. And the therapist told me, your wife's not capable of doing that. I see that now. It's my assessment. You're going to have to figure out another game plan. What ended up happening was I did get divorced, but that's a different story. But I stopped going to the hardware store for milk because she's not capable of doing that. Every time I did, I would get debate because I would get a little wiring, we'd start talking. I would think I'm getting some breakthrough, and she would throw a cheap shot or something would happen, and boom, I couldn't handle that. It was too much for me. And then I would be screaming or punching walls. That's what I looked like before I came in out. And then I stopped that. You know, I haven't done that for 4 years, and I'm proud of myself. But it hasn't been easy. I've leaned on you guys, though, just like Josiah said, writing the letter, talking, reaching out, dissolving, you know, discharging that power so I can at least heal myself and then figure out, you know, okay, she speaks Chinese, I speak a different language, I'm going to have to figure out how the fuck do I talk to her right now. It's not working. You know, I can't go to the hardware store for milk.
Right.
So I go to the hardware store, which is you guys, and I get love, I get nurturing, and then I come back, and most of the time, it's a good time between her and I, even though we don't live together. But we're about, I'm with a girlfriend now who actually is love avoidant also like that. So I've learned not to talk to her like that at all. We never got into an argument anything, because she's a little more sensitive. But the only thing I do is I go to my sponsor and my people, and it's like, and then I come back, and I realize that if I'm really doing the step one,
right, and so one of the important things about you...
If I'm really in step one, if I'm really powerless, when I do a step one 100%, you know, the ADA say, it's the only step you have to do. Step one is the only step I have to do 100%, which is realize and accept that I am powerless, and that no matter what I do, I cannot fit the square into the hole. It's not going to work, so I got to let go, and now I got to move to the other steps, which is... coming back to sanity, turning it over, you know, looking at my part in it, removing my defect, going to the point where I can meditate, pray, be of service, and I'm back in a good space. And then she will come out of that in God's will, you know, in God's time, not in my time. Like, that's the partner I have, that partner's a gift to you to become a better person. And I got to realize, like, hey, this is not about her. This is my issue. Like, this is my issue that I got to come with her.
And one of the most powerful things about that example to me as I listen to it is that you've done a lot of work. You went to therapy with the ex. You've come in here and done a lot of work. And you end up with the same type of woman, but you have so much more successful a relationship because you're so different. And what I've experienced is that I've got to be really careful about saying that, oh, no, I can't be with a woman who's X, Y, and Z. You know, because I'm attracted to what I'm attracted to, much like it sounds like you are. But what I can do is I can bring a different me to that relationship and allow myself to be attracted to what I'm attracted to.
Yeah, and I learned what's called share, check, share. So, and I do it in a very calm way. I'll just tell her now, like, hey, babe, can we talk about something? So I share, and then I check to see if she can share back, if we can go further. But if she's in a space where she can't, then I honor that. And I realized, well, I don't have to change her. Why don't I just love her and accept her the way she is, and this is okay. I can go to where I need to get my needs met, and that, this, I don't need it that bad anymore. You know, I have enough love in my life that I don't need it from my partner. She's a great partner. She loves me. She's pretty awesome, actually. But sometimes we have moments where it's like, there's differences. I say, yeah, okay, how important is this?
Right. Let Thanks.
Let it go.
Run.
How do you, assuming things are going okay, how do you bring up, let's go to therapy, without pissing off?
So, when I brought it up with my now wife, I think we were engaged at the time, having a conversation about something and, you know, just, you know, something I think that would be really helpful. And for me, it was, I used to go see this woman. She was really helpful for me. I think it might be great. I love you so much. We have such a wonderful relationship. I think that it would be great if we could get some tools for communicating better, because at the time we did occasionally have disagreements and misunderstandings. And so it's absolutely not a criticism. It's absolutely not about what's wrong with the relationship. It's about how we can make it better. And you know, I was lucky because my now wife is really receptive to it.
What tools do you find helpful for getting comfortable with the discomfort?
How do you get comfortable with the discomfort? And that's a really good one, because what we've been talking about so far is we're telling you, okay, so you're uncomfortable, and your default in dealing with that discomfort is by yapping at her one way or another. Don't do that. And you're left with the discomfort. Actually, you're left with the discomfort. So what do you do? Well, we've been talking about some of it. So you call a sponsor. So you pray about it. So you write about it. You know, sometimes literally just walking out of the room and getting away from the source of the discomfort. But serenity prayer, somebody mentioned that. That's a good one. I find sometimes that I just have to bite my tongue and let it go, because what I know is that in most of those little things where my wife will say something that hurts my feelings or makes me angry, if I can just miss that first beat, it'll dissipate itself very quickly. But like I said, I mean, doing what we do, you know, gratitude lists and meetings and sponsors and all that stuff, we're never alone. You know, we're constantly telling each other it's going to be okay. We're constantly sharing with each other the experiences that we have and how we come through the other end. So.
Yeah, I find myself being able to STFU. I'm listening to her, giving her the dignity to say whatever she wants. And she usually thanks me afterwards. But for the entire 30 minutes to an hour, I'm sitting there inside. Because she never asked the question. You know, and I'm waiting because you never ask the question. And inside, I'm just like this ball of tension. And while I am giving her what she needs, inside, I feel like so uncomfortable.
So two things about that. First of all, what's the question you want? She never asked the question. What's the question?
It depends.
Okay, so you're expecting her to ask a question of you.
Yeah.
Relating to whatever it is that she's talking about. Okay, and you want the question because you want to offer the solution, you want to offer your opinion, you want to weigh in. Have you ever said, can I offer you an opinion? Can I make a comment? Have you ever tried that?
No.
Might be worth a try. But if it's not, if that doesn't work, I mean, to me, what I know is that it seems like my hair is on fire when I'm sitting in that discomfort, but as soon as that conversation ends, I'm basically fine. So, I mean, you know, it's like, how uncomfortable is it? I mean, yes, it sucks, and yes, you want to participate, but I can't imagine you're not getting better at it all the time. And I remember what you were like when you came in. Joe.
My name is Joe. Hi, Joe. My discomfort is not because of something that they're doing or not doing. My discomfort is because there's something that I want to get that's not showing up. That's all. And the solution is to let go of what I want. I mean, that's what this is about. It's like, if I want this person to be able to do something that they're not capable of doing, my efforts to bring them to do that is my efforts to control, to manage and direct this person's life. You know, whether they can or cannot do it, my efforts to make that happen is about managing and controlling someone else's life. And that's because of what I want to be that I'm finding is not showing up. And the quickest and easiest cure is to let go of what I want for me. Then I can be okay. You know, then I'm not looking to get anything from this other person. In fact, where I'm coming from is a place of acceptance. This person is okay, we're just fine. I don't need anything from them. Which is really what our seventh tradition is about, self-supporting for our own contributions. I don't need anything from you in order for me to be okay. If I do, I'm going to set up a codependent relationship. Because then you may give to me what you think I need in order to be okay so that you'll be okay. And then you are dependent on me to be okay. You just got this wild codependent relationship going on. Both of you are depending on each other for your own personal well-being. It's not about that. It's about bringing that personal well-being into the relationship, not having the relationship be the basis for that personal well-being. And the way to do that is let go what you want. Let go what you want. Thanks.
Willie.
Hi, my name is Willie. Thank you guys for all your shares. I'd like to, Jeff Sines said it really neat, address his issue of when you're borrowing and you seem to not be able to get your point over and you can never, my sponsor say, what makes you think you're so great that somebody ought to give you an apology? That ain't your business, you know. But the thing that he said to me is that some of the times I can do, if I'm really feeling it and I want a person to hear it, I have to say it at a time, at a place, and in a manner in which they can hear. And so I just make statements. My wife and I may have a fight about something that I left uncomfortable with the feelings. And to go back at the same time and tell her that she's not going to hear. 3 or 4 days later, when things are calmer, I may just make the statement passing, hey, honey, you know the night we were talking about so and so. I kind of felt a little different about that. She can hear that. And she does the same thing to me. Because sometimes I have no idea what I've said and done and what effect it had upon her. So one of the things I did learn, and I was a horrible communicator, that was one of the biggest issues in our marriage, is because she would say something and I just shut down. She'd do something else, I shut down. Then all of a sudden she'll say, you know, honey, move the shoe, and I'd blow up. I mean, I throw a chair, something didn't warrant throwing a chair with the shoe. That's because I was like this inner tube that's so full I wouldn't let that steam off. But when I let the steam off, my making statements, not looking for no kind of response. And I think that's one of the biggest improvements in our marriage. So I hope that helped.
Thank you.
And trying to.
Yeah. Thanks.
Jimmed.
I'm Jimmed. And pertaining to you, you know, sounds like you're married to my wife when it comes to that. And I found through my sponsor teaching me to write it down to, first of all, shut the fuck up all the time, is that my wife and I, we are an unbelievable team. We want to get stuff done. But when it comes to communicating, I'm fucked up. She's somewhat fucked up. I'm the one that grew up in the alcoholic home. She's the one that became affected by somebody who was affected in the alcoholic home. So when she's pissed off, or she said something that pisses me off, or hits me in the hole and starts opening that hole back up, I really got to look at what is she saying? Because so many times it's, you've hurt me or you've said something I don't like. I want to come back and fix the problem. I want to fix the problem. But I have now learned that my wife doesn't give a fuck about fixing the problem because there is no problem in her head. This is life. This is how a relationship goes. It has its moments. But she, minute it's done with her. Me, we got to work it out. We got to talk. I got to figure out what happened. I don't want to do it again. You know, all this bullshit's going on in my head. And the minute I bring it back up, my wife's got 10 million things on her mind the next day. She's got to go to work. She's got to do that. What have I just done? I have fucked her day. So that's why learning to just shut the fuck up and accept. This is the woman I want to be with. She's not perfect. It's okay. Most of the time, there's a lot I love about her. But sometimes, holy fuck, I want to kill her. But she wants to kill me probably a hell of a lot fucking more. You know? So, where does it end? Where does it, you got to draw a line. Where do we want to win? And my sponsor has taught me that, you know what? It's going to be all right. And I swear to God, that fucking word's right there. It's going to be all right. I go to bed so many times fucking wanting to say something, but going, it's going to be all right. It'll be gone. It'll be gone. 4 days later, I think back to it. It's gone. And it's right. You know what? They're a different animal than us. And we have to respect that in our relationship and listen to them.
And I think that's one of the most important points to understand when you're in a situation where there's this kind of difficulty communicating. We're men, we're studly, we're macho, right? We all that. Yeah, thank you. And yet, so many of us Al-Anon men are so much more sensitive than the women that we're with. You know, she'll blow off that fucking steam and you'll be all hurt and angry. And she blew it off and now she's fine. And we spend days pouting and fuming and plotting. And no, she's let it go. She's like, what? So that's one of the things. We're wired different. And it's not just because it's a boy and girl thing. That's one thing I've had to recognize. Roger?
Sometimes what she says is right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes what she says is right.
And if I own it, if I said,
right.
You're one time we had some workers at our house and they were doing something and she wanted to run from the bathroom into the closet naked. And she said, are the workers around? And I don't know what I said, but later she was pissed off and she said, you just didn't want those guys to think you were a pussy. And I was like, I said, you're right. And I swear to God, she went, and that was it.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Juan.
Thank you very much, Isaiah. You know, one of the things that I struggle with the most is that communication, especially to those closest to me that I'm my mom, my wife. And so what I've heard, and I heard Eric say that earlier today, that all of these things that we're talking about are the filters that I need in which to filter all my thoughts, and especially my vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Because I don't, that's, you know, I practice a lot up here, but I haven't practiced a lot of the verbal stuff. And one of the things that I heard early on from my sister, which got me into the program, was to question my motives. And I just wondered if you could share on that, because it's been a very valuable tool that brings me to an honest approach that I can answer to myself first, and then maybe get another perspective.
Right, right. So the point is stopping before you make a comment and asking what are your motives. And you know, first of all, anytime you can stop, then you've employed this tool. You've employed this tool. Anytime you've stopped. And to me, that is such a powerful place to come from. Because by stopping, by not responding to that emotional discomfort, by not trying to ease your discomfort by saying something, man, you've already won. You have already communicated to yourself that you live in a safe world, that it's okay. Because that first response is one that you want to make because you're uncomfortable and it's not okay for you to be uncomfortable. I think that so much of what we do in this program is about sort of managing our emotions, learning how to deal in a different way with that discomfort that we feel. We are that sensitive. We don't want to admit that we're wrong and we need to say something. You know, how do I deal with my discomfort? I make sure that you are all okay and that it's fine and you're happy with me and then I'm good. This notion of questioning your motives. You know, why is it you need to go to her and ask her if it's okay? Why is it that you would resist admitting that you're wrong? Why is that? What fear, what insecurity do you have within you that you need to get that affirmation from outside? I mean, I think Joe's point about, you know, you have to make sure that you take complete care of yourself, and if you want anything from your spouse, then it's codependent, is true up to a point, but let's be realistic. You know, any of us in any kind of a significant relationship, family, romance, work, do in fact need something from that other person, and there's nothing wrong with that up to a point. But after that point, then Joe's point kicks in, and we need to figure out where it is that we're trying to get more than we should from that relationship. So, good point. Michael?
Hi, I'm Michael.
Michael.
You know, there's three things that, we were talking about this earlier. Experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. And there's three things that come up for me with this. And one, did I really understand what she or someone else said? Did I really hear, or did I hear it through the filter of my own self-esteem or some fear? So I've learned that I need to feedback what I've heard so I understand either the question or the statement, one. Number two, I don't use the word you.
Mm.
I stay what I call in the eye of it. And I feel this. I understand this. I heard this. And then the third one is, let me see if I can remember what it was. I'm old now. But those two alone will help me in any situation because, oh, and then is there some, I don't make executive decisions. I try to follow what I understand to be substantial equanimity in the relationship to be inclusive in the decision-making process when it has to do with the relationship.
I particularly like those first two, and they're so big. The first one is, you know, am I clearly hearing what you're saying? And that's a big one. You know, my wife will say something like, did you put my shoes away? Simple question of did you put my shoes away? And it's like, yeah, I put your shoes away. You never put a goddamn thing away in this house. And I was tripping over the fucking things. By the way, you have 50 pairs of shoes and 30 of them you don't wear.
You just pulled the trigger.
Boom. Do you see why I started with STFU? Because I heard something completely different. I heard criticism when really all it was where the hell are my beige shoes?
Yeah.
That's all she asked me. So yes, am I hearing it or is it going through that distorted filter in my mind that's telling me that people are criticizing me, that it's not okay, that's da-da-da-da-da. The other thing that you said about the you versus the I statements, I can in fact go back to my wife the next day and say, when you asked me about the shoes, what I heard was criticism about having moved your things. That what I heard was that it's not okay for me to move things around. What I felt was like I was being attacked. And that way, she knows that I'm not criticizing her. She knows that I'm not saying, I didn't say that. All I said was, if it's all on me, then she's got nowhere to go with it. So yeah. Yeah, you?
Yeah, just to add on what you're saying, I had a couple of therapists say to me once, just what you're saying, but what I heard, what I may have made up in my head was totally take any sort of stand.
That's good. You know, one of the things that I have spent some time with my wife talking about is you know, some of my insecurities, some of my abandonment issues, some of the things that I come away from having grown up in a home affected by alcoholism. You know, I've opened it up and I've told her, look, this is the guy that I am. And the more that she has an appreciation for what some of my frailties are, some of my weaknesses, the better able she is to hear me when I do say, here's how that one affected me. Here's how I felt. And I actually get some compassion back. Dublin.
I found that once, I don't do it all the time, but once I could keep my mouth shut, and I could notice some things. And sometimes I could say, I haven't said this very often, and maybe it's only this one time that I keep repeating to people, I don't know. But I remember one time saying, you know what, I'm angry and it has nothing to do with you. I remember saying that once to my wife, and boy, just nothing was the same after that. Yeah. In fact, other times when I got angry, it also was easier for me to say it and easier for her to take that in as a possibility that maybe this isn't about her. And the other thing about the, you know, the right and wrong stuff, I used to think that anybody who argued with me and I couldn't come up with an argument against them meant they were right, I was wrong, and I couldn't do anything about it. And I remember my wife would just say no and wouldn't give a reason. She'd just say no. I said, you can't do that. That's just not right. I mean, I have to have a chance to talk about this. And of course, all it meant was I had to have a chance to convince her. And I can do lots of things. But the fact of the matter is, any kind of logic always starts with a premise. The logic that goes after that may be really sound, but the initial premise may be ridiculous. So here's one example. I don't know why. I'm macro neat. My wife is micro neat. It took me a long time to come to that. Because I used to say that I was neat and she was sloppy, but it's not true. I'm macro. So that means it's in the closet, it's in a drawer. That's good. Mm. Doesn't matter what the drawer looks like.
Yeah.
For her, you put. I mean, her when she actually puts it away, which is not as often as me, it really looks good. And so I actually went to her once and said, you know what? I realized how, could you help me be neat with some of my stuff? Because I want to be neat, but I hate doing it, and I get all flustered, you know. She was glad to help me.
So two things about that that I think are interesting. One, you had the realization that you were angry and it wasn't about her. That's a big deal.
Yes.
You know, I think one of the most valuable things that we can do is become more aware of what our thinking is and our feeling. So, you know, there is this thing in psychology where there's this idea that there's a part of the brain that can observe what another part of the brain is doing and feeling. And so, you know, there's a part of your brain, Arianex, that's saying, I'm really uncomfortable sitting here. And that's the piece of the brain that we start to develop. There's a piece of the brain that says, I'm angry, but it's not about her, even though it's manifesting in a conversation with her. So that's a big deal. The second thing about what you just said that I think is interesting is, we can have emotional responses that seem like they might be a part of a conversation that's happening, but aren't. And that's where this notion of halt comes in. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. My wife and I have actually spent a lot of time in that therapist's office figuring out that there are times when she is so hungry and is so unaware of it that she thinks that she's absolutely about to kill me. And, you know, we've had these huge screaming fights over why don't you have me sitting in a restaurant feeding me right now? And she was legitimately angry with me, so much so that she was still sitting in the therapist's office saying, he wouldn't just tell me where the closest restaurant was. He was looking at Yelp and trying to find something, and I wanted him. And the therapist just looked at her and said, if you know you get angry when you're hungry, you're a big girl. Put crackers in your purse. But the point is, I could never have said that. Yeah, I wrote the check for that therapy session, really. But the good news is my wife was receptive to it. The good news is that we're both aware that there are times we're out running around on the weekend and it's been 5 hours since we've eaten and we start to snap a little bit. It's like, you know what? We should probably eat. There are reasons that we get angry. You haven't had enough to eat. You've had too much coffee. You just had a fight with your boss. You know, you just got a speeding ticket. There are reasons that we get emotional that have nothing to do with this. And there are times when we ought not to be talking.
Hi, Mike.
Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm listening to the conversation very intently. And, you know, a couple of observations and a question. The first one is that marriage is really the only socially approved of and celebrated codependency relationship we all have with our parents. And just been listening to the techniques and the tactics of creating that space, that detachment, once we step on the landline. And don't step on the landline, shut the fuck up, and back off, create some tension, agree and disagree. Very tactical approaches to get that detachment. But one of the things I'm struggling with now in my own relationship is I want to transform. And if I'm detaching, the way I'm using it is it's because of attach. And every time I detach from the next tactical situation, it's just because I went back to my codependency, I ran into another landmine, and now I got to use another technique just to get my space. But I want to transform. I want to be non-attached on thinking and then gift my love to my wife and to my children and to my significant relationships. So what would you advocate? I mean, is that doable, number one? Is non-attachment a practical, realistic way of handling? And can the 12 steps get together?
So interesting question, and not necessarily an easy one. I think that this notion of being non-attached and never getting into codependent situations, an admirable goal. I don't know if anyone ever reaches it. I think that what we do around here is a process, and I think that we slowly get better at it over time. But what I know, especially from having been in this group for a long time, is that I've never seen anybody graduate. I've never seen anybody do it perfectly. But what we do is we keep trying. You know, I mean, you guys know my sponsor story, right? I mean, 80 years old in this program for however long he was, and as his wife was dying of cancer, he came up with what he thought was a good solution. You know, fortunately, he shared it publicly. I don't need to repeat the details, but that guy's got as good a program as anyone I've known, and it failed him at some point. Now he's gotten back up on the horse, and he's trying again. He's doing great. But the point is, this is a process that we never perfect. And my feeling about the 12 steps to answer that piece of the question is absolutely the single best part of the program for figuring out what it is you do, what your beliefs are, where all that stuff comes from, and changing those things. That's what the inventory through amends process is all about. And yes, I think the closer we get to being non-attached and the further away we get from being codependent, you know, the more we move away from those behaviors that don't serve us. Let me know how it goes, because if you get to that place, you need to sponsor me. Oh, wait, you've already gone. Go ahead, Bill.
I resent navigating premenstrual syndrome.
Okay, well, so...
I just want to say, there are 4 days, you know, when I can shut the fuck up, but I'm resentful and a son of a bitch and a surly motherfucker, but she doesn't even remember. She's got this hormonal clearance that wipes it all away, you know. And the most insulting, biting bullshit, and I'm biting my tongue for 4 days because I know I can't get into it. I know it's gonna raise the roof. I know it's gonna burn the whole shit house down. But it will totally change when she speaks another language 4 days later.
Right.
That's just, I'm asking for help.
Right, so right. What the and fuck? That's
it's not alcohol, but it's different.
That's not at all unlike this notion of, you know, we get into a fight and I want to talk about it later and she won't or can't, or, you know, the question never gets asked or whatever it is. You're taking it personally. You're believing what she's saying, you know, and it ain't about you. It's about her hormones. You just happen to be the closest goddamn target, you know? So if you can't get away from it, you know, one of the things you have to repeat to yourself over and over again, this isn't about me. So really, if we were to put this up in the column and we got over to what's my part in it,
I
take it personally. I believe her. And I forget that 4 days later, it's going to be like it never happened. You know, that's a big part of our problem is Al-Anon men.
Yeah.
We're sensitive. You were mean to me. It wasn't about you. Joe, you had your hand up.
Yeah, last September, my wife and I had actually a success. Once every 3 months, we had to buy a car. The car went out. So we got an offer from the credit union to get a car expert, you know, like a guy who looks around all the dealerships and shows you, right? So...
A car buying sponsor, I like it.
Yeah, a car sponsor. So I figured, okay, before we did this, a couple weeks before, I said, I need some money in the bank. So I was make sure that I was STFUing for smaller decisions my wife made, not all of which I liked. So I said, okay, we got some money in the bank kind of thing. And so the car sponsor drove us down to LA Motors, and my wife kind of wanted a Honda Pilot used. But he said, Honda CR-V is what we've got here. And he showed her a Honda CR-V, which looked exactly like the new car, 2011 with 14,000 miles on it. And so I'm saying, okay, and I said, that looks really good to me. And then the car sponsor said, I can't get you a better deal. A Honda Pilot would cost a lot more money. And so there's this pause, right? The pause that terrifies me. Anyway, so I'm saying, yeah, it seems like the best. I just repeated what the sponsor said.
Smart.
And my wife, and she kind of went, okay. And boom, we have this really great car. Now she needles me sometime about it. And she'll see a Honda Pilot and says, boy, that is really a nice thing. But that's my post-buying STFU.
That's not taking the bait, is what that is.
That's winning.
Yeah. So isn't it fascinating? I mean, it fascinates me to hear him tell that story and then mention the pause, which terrifies me. Seriously, it's a big deal to shut the fuck up and then just sit in that discomfort. Bruce, you had your hand up.
Yeah, you know, I'm married to a woman who...
Well, there's the problem.
I didn't see her cry or get an apology from her for 15 years of marriage. We've been married 33 years. The first time I saw her cry was 15 years into our marriage. And the first apology I got. And when I first met her, I was talking about some sensitive issue, and she said, well, in my family, if you're looking for sympathy, you can find it in the dictionary between shit and syphilis. There's your answer, baby. She's Irish Catholic, her father was a union organizer, and he raised the kids like, you know, I work for a union. You know, and she's smart and articulate and persuasive. You can't win an argument with her. I mean, you can, but you have to be kind and rational and calm. And what she's looking to me for is that I'm not going to fall apart when she falls apart. Because she freaks out. She freaks out over little things. And then she starts blaming me and my son. And I've learned through this program, working the steps and being around you guys, that I have to be sympathetic to her. She's freaked out. She's just striking at anything in sight. So it's not my time to be a little baby and go, yeah, stop picking on me. You know, I say, it's okay, honey. Or I do shut the fuck up, right? It's the most powerful tool. This is a woman who is really strong-willed. There's no other defense against her except gentleness and rational behavior. So, and I was never capable of that until being in this men's meeting. I learned that from you guys. I was the guy who freaked out. You're mad, you bitch, you're mad, you're a ball buster, you're masturbating me. But I was masturbating myself by that behavior. So when I have started to stand up to her, but not in a mean way. I say what I mean. And she has transformed. She picks her battles. She doesn't just strike at me at every little thing. Because, you know, and so, you know, it's been a great tool. STFU is the root of it. It's the first part. And then making sure you're not just arguing with her that she's a bitch and you want to oppose her. You say, what is it you really want?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I can do that.
Or, oh, okay, I can't.
You know, it's a
great... So a few things about that. Thank you. Because first of all, you're going to win an argument, but only if you're kind and rational and calm. Second of all, have sympathy for who she is and where she's coming from. Is she premenstrual? Is she just incapable of actually talking about something afterwards? That's really big. And I love the point about I was emasculating myself. You know, so interesting for us to be so sensitive, and yet we're the bigger guy. I mean, we can get louder and meaner than them, but really the problem is that we're so sensitive. We become more masculine and more courageous, more brave, more men if we don't have to get big and loud, if we can allow them to go on and on without saying anything. Nothing's more powerful. Bob.
Bob. I wanted to share an experience I had working my ninth step with my wife, something that I've heard talk about. You know, we took a walk, and I proceeded to say all the things that I had done wrong in the marriage. You know, arrogance, sarcasm, being judgmental, and my wife probably agreed to all of it. I said, okay, well, that's good. Ninth step is done. And it was like, no, we weren't finished yet, because then she wanted to elaborate. And I had been instructed to listen to her response, and that's what I did. And that was the most important part of working the step. And it wasn't enough for me to just STFU in that situation. You know, I actually needed to be an engaged listener. So there are times to detach, and there are times when we have to engage. And this was a time when I had to actually listen and reflect back. And she would say, when you did this, I felt like that. I'd say, okay, let me make sure I understand. And, you know, it was very hard because the initial response was to argue with her and say, well, no, that's not what you felt. Or you had no right to feel that. But instead, because I had been prepared by my sponsor, I listened, asked questions, and actually tried to reflect back to her what her experience had been when I behaved that way. And it was very difficult, but it ended up being just like the greatest help we ever had, because she felt hurt by me in a way that she hadn't before.
Right, and one of the most important things about being able to do that, thank you for that story, is to be able to listen and acknowledge without feeling like you're taking on some kind of blame, like you're not minimizing yourself by saying, oh yeah, I'm such a horrible person. All you're really doing is just allowing her to offer her opinion. And man, yeah, if you don't have to argue back, really big. Navidad.
Yeah, thank you. Luis. Thank you so much for what you're doing. This is awesome. And I just wanted to piggyback on something you said, and something that was said in the context of the PMS issue, which is that I have a disease that wants me to believe that I'm a piece of shit. And so it's always looking for evidence to make that point. And often that evidence comes in the form of the words that are being said to me by my significant other. And so I have to be very careful to know how much of what is being said is true and how much of it is. So my point is that one of the first things my sponsor says whenever I call him about stuff like this is it her stuff or is it your stuff? You know, and the larger point I want to make about that is that this is my disease that wants me to believe that I'm a piece of shit. So it's my responsibility to work my recovery to maintain my spiritual condition so that when those daggers are being hurled at me, I'm better equipped to know, oh no, that's I can ignore that one, or oh, maybe that one's... Because the other thing that I've learned is that whenever someone is coming at me with stuff like that, I do have a responsibility to listen to for any grain of truth in what they're saying. So that if there's something that they're saying that is true and valid that I need to listen to, then I can do that. But it all starts with me doing as good a job as I can to work this stuff and to surround myself with you guys so I can have a clear mind and therefore, you know, not have all those filters that distort the things that are being said to me. So,
Luis, thank you. So a couple of things about that. One, I think that it's absolutely true that part of our Al-Anon condition is, you called it piece of shit, we can call it low self-esteem, we can call it unlovability, we can call it fear of abandonment. There's a bunch of different ways to describe that thing that drives us, that thing that makes us take these things personally. But to me, that's kind of at the root of all of our stuff. And in fact, one of the best ways for us to combat that is to make sure that we stay among men just like us so that we recognize what it is that we have Stay among men that are just like us, that are in the process of recovering from that. Stay among men who are willing to say, I love you no matter what. Stay among men who are working on recognizing positive traits and making them better, so that in fact we do have a less distorted sense of who we are, so that we don't take on everything that we're accused of. So really good stuff. Thank you. Yeah, Mike.
Hi, I'm Mike.
Mike.
Hi. Thank you, Josiah, for coming and leading this discussion. And thanks all you guys for sharing your what you do in your real lives, the real deal. It's very enlightening. It was just occurring to me that we're here in a seminary and there's religious icons around, and made me think of silence as a spiritual practice that a lot of people do in yoga and Buddhists and I guess lots of different religious traditions, spiritual traditions. So I was just wondering if you or any of the guys had any experience how shutting up had a spiritual aspect for you or led you to something that involved God.
Well, so as I said when I first started talking about STFU, I think that it is a real world manifestation of the first three steps, you know, and the first... The second and the third steps are the pieces of our program that make it okay to be powerless. You know, it is fucked up. You said something about this on a Thursday night a few weeks ago. It's like, we come in here and the very first damn thing we're told is that, oh, right, that problem you have with that drinker, right, so did we, guess what? Ain't shit you can do about it. And we're thinking, you know, I know when I came in, I was thinking, I've got a teenage daughter who's killing herself doing dope. That's not okay. And by the way, you should see my house. It's chaos. And you guys said, you're all right. We've been there. I know. Come on in. And then you put your arm around my shoulder and said, is shit you can do about that? And then you go to the Saturday speaker meeting, and there are people talking about their kids being heroin addicts living under a bridge. Oh, faith and hope, thanks. That's what she's going to become. That's what we're being told. Let's not put lipstick on that pig. That's what we're being told. We're powerless over that. How in the world is that okay? How in the world is it that we walk around here telling each other it's going to be all right? Because of the second and the third steps. Because we're being told that we can be restored to sanity by a power greater than ourselves. Because we're being told that we can make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. That's what STFU is. It's nothing less than that. It is that thing in your gut. It is that thing that haunts you for days after she says something to you. It's that thing you live with for 4 days while she's PMSing, and you know that it's not okay. And we tell you, oh no, shh, shh, shh. Well, how in the world can you do that when you feel that way, when you're experiencing that? Second and third steps. Right. It's powerful, but the real world boots on the ground version of it is just psh, stop, stop.
Doug.
No, wait, you've gone, Doug. Let's go.
Hi, my name's David.
David.
In all of my relationships, every one of them, romantic, whatever, I have a tendency, because I'd love to say it's because I grew up in alcoholism, but that's not the reason why I have this defective character. It's not the pure reason why I have this defective character. But in all of my relationships, I want to make you responsible for how I feel. Every relationship I've had with every person. And I was so grateful in my first fifth step, it was brought to my attention time and time again, you made me feel this way. Then how is it my defective character? If they're making me feel that way, then how do I own it? I loved to blame things on my childhood. I loved it. I did it for up until I was 35. What time is it, actually? what my friend, what he pointed out to me in my inventory was there's a lot of... You have problems with women in your inventory. No, really. In Al-Anon, no.
A man in Al-Anon?
Yeah, really? Yeah. And I blamed those problems with women on my mom. How does it become my defective character? And Al-Anon, I'm so grateful for, always says that this might have affected you. However, the defective character is yours and not the other person's. And one of the things is, as an Al-Anon, I want to make you responsible for my well-being time and time again. And I'm grateful that I don't have to do that today as much.
Thank you. And you know, isn't it interesting that we circle back around to the same thing now the third time? Joe said it first. about being codependent. Mike talked about non-attachment, and now you're talking about taking responsibility for your own defects of character. We keep coming back to the same thing. Anthony.
I am Anthony.
Anthony!
You know, whenever I used to call and whine to my sponsor about Kim would have me on fire, I'd call him up and he asked me one question, was yes or answer. He would say, Anthony, is this a deal breaker? And what that would do to me when I get to think about that, I get to put in perspective, am I ready to leave my marriage and my life over? Right. And I think about it, I'm like, no. And he goes, so what's your part in it? And then I get to tell him what my part was in it. And a lot of times he gets me to be preventive maintenance and say, well, you get to do one thing every day for whether or not her not knowing it, and you get to be loving and kind to her, not to judge, but don't criticize me. So when something does go wrong, we're in a loving, kind place like we treat newcomers. And what used to bother me a lot when Kim would come home, she'd be in a funk. I'd be right away, I'd like, oh, what did I do? So I'd have to ask her, so what's going on? Did I do anything? She'd go, it's not about you. I was going to remind her, it's not about me. And you know what? I'm so grateful she's got 25 years in the program. And I get to ask her today, I noticed you seem kind of funny. Did I have anything to do with this? And she either says yes or no. And if she says no, I'm so relieved. Because she says, yes, I have a lot to explain to you. So she says, no, I'm going to let it go and I'm going to move on. Because I know she's got a sponsor, she's got friends, that she's going to go talk to, and when she's going to come back, she's going to be in her place, because she's not going to hear from me. She's got to hear from them. And as for my wife, you know, I used to always go to her and say, oh, about this and all that. She'd be like, go talk to your penis friends, your boyfriend. I need to be talking to you guys about it, because you guys fill me up with love and everything else. Not my wife, because that's when we had anonymity in the marriage, autonomy in the marriage. And that's why it's important, because we get too much of this, and it's not healthy. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Anthony. Chris.
Trying to get over penis friends.
That's ridiculous. In
the conversation of the spiritual side of STF, that's really interesting. I mean, and what I was thinking is, because I spend a lot of time looking at their, you know, studying religion and spirituality, well, and there's it's accepted. What I've learned that I've found from a spiritual and from a religious standpoint too is acceptance. That idea we have in here about live and let live, and accepting life on life's terms. You know, some people recognize the phrase "Forgive them, Father, for they don't know what they do." Mm-hmm. You know, and that's that act of forgiveness is really powerful to me. And there's in Buddhist tradition, the other things, other traditions too, that is forgiveness. And I look at the serenity prayer, you know, that whole thing of, is this anything I can do something about? Or is this something I have no control over? You know, I love the serenity prayer. And that God grant me, and I go back to that first two words. It doesn't say, okay, so I want to have the courage, or I want to have the serenity. No, it says, God grant me the serenity to accept these things cannot change. You know, and that is such a key piece there, and I really do, you know, the strength in that comes out of working on that connection with God. So that's where STFU, I love that what you said too, that STFU, the real world manifestation of steps out to the tree, you know,
sure
that's
is.
A great way to put it. So anyway, I love that idea, I'm going to think on it some more, thanks.
Speaking of STFU, it's 9:00, it's probably enough meeting, right? I see nodding heads and yawning mouths. Why don't we STFU and go about our evening, you guys? I love you. Thank you so much. Yeah. And now a word from our facilitator.
Where is he?